take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. Radical Russ here, coming to you from deep in America's last absolute prohibition state, the gem state, the state of Idaho, the state of absolute prohibition, where you can still be arrested and put behind bars for hemp. For industrial hemp, people, you can't even get CBD full spectrum products in the state of Idaho legally. It's still a crime here. We've got an amazing show for you today. I've just had a huge week, and I want to start off by giving thanks to Kevin Miller. He's the conservative talk radio host during the morning drive time on AM 580 KIDO, which is also heard on FM 107.5 KIDO. And he dedicated the entire hour, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. today, for our conversation regarding medical marijuana in the state of Idaho and how the Idaho legislature is doing everything in their power to try to take away the power of the initiative and stop medical marijuana, no matter what it takes. So that's going to be the focus of today's show. We talked a lot about it on Kevin's show. We took a lot of calls. It was very fun talking to some of the people. I got to say, we'll cover that as well if we get some time. We may have to save that for next week because today's show is just jam-packed. We'll start off with the Cannabis Headline Newsweek. We've got the tales of marijuana legalization proceeding in places like Minnesota and New Mexico and passing in Virginia, the first southern state to pass marijuana legalization, even though it doesn't go into effect till 2024, excuse me. But hey, we'll take it. 16 of the states, one more state, will have a third of the nation with legal marijuana. We'll cover that in the Cannabis Headline Newsweek, as well as the latest developments here in the state of Idaho. In Behind the Headlines, I'm going to bring you my testimony on Senate Bill 1150. This one is put forth by Idaho State Senator Lodge, and it's a niche kind of an argument. It's about requiring signature petitions to be taken in state, which would be hard if you're deployed for the military or you're a student out of state or you're working on an oil rig somewhere, but you still have the Idaho voting power and you can even vote absentee. So this would take away what we're calling absentee initiative petitioning. So I'll talk to you about that and Behind the Headlines, why it's important to our campaign, and play you my testimony. And then for the radical rant at the end of the show, an extended rant on the city of Ontario, Oregon. It's the border town of 11,000 people just outside of Idaho's Boise metropolitan area of about 750,000. So this little town serves the whole Boise metro area, has about 15,000 regular visitors coming in every week to buy legal marijuana to the tune of $8.2 million a month. So we're going to talk about how the Ontario City Council is banking on that marijuana money, calling it like winning the lottery, and then how they had the audacity the very next week to turn to the state of Oregon and ask for a tax increase because they're not making enough money. They're bringing in $250,000 a month, but they're just not making enough money. And then stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio, dedicating the entire hour to C. Scott Grow. No, this is not a Dr. Seuss theme. C. Scott Grow is actually the name of a state senator in Idaho who is trying to take us back to the 1920s by putting prohibition in the state constitution. Prohibition in constitutions never works out well, but he's going to try it. So you'll be shocked by some of the things he had to say in defense of his prohibition amendment in the state of Idaho. We'll get to all that, but first, let's get to the news.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you every weekday by Radical Russ Radio at RadicalRuss.com, your 24-hour source for marijuana music and cannabis conversations. Subscribe today for just $4.20 at patreon.com/radicalruss.
With your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, March 5th, 2021, I'm Russ Belville.
The Virginia legislature approved adult use marijuana legalization Saturday in a historic vote, marking the first state in the Old South to embrace full legalization. The House passed the measure in a 48-43 vote, and the Senate approved it in a 20-19 vote. Not a single Republican voted for the bill in either chamber. The vote came after a conference committee struck a deal on Saturday to reconcile different versions of the bill that passed in both chambers earlier this month. Under the compromise legislation, marijuana possession would not become legal until January 2024, when regulated sales are scheduled to start. The state would start setting up a marijuana regulatory agency this July. President Joe Biden's nominee to serve as U.S. Attorney General has reiterated in written testimony to multiple senators that he does not feel the Department of Justice should be using its resources to prosecute people who are acting in compliance with state marijuana laws. In a series of responses to questions from lawmakers who followed up on last week's committee confirmation hearings, Judge Merrick Garland made clear that, from his perspective, the government should be focusing on large-scale criminal enterprises that circumvent state legalization laws instead of going after people who are abiding by local cannabis policies. He made similar comments during questioning before the Senate Judiciary Committee last week. The panel formally approved his confirmation on Monday, clearing the path to a full vote in the chamber. Admitting to past marijuana use should not automatically disqualify people from being employed in the federal government, the Office of Personnel Management said in a memo distributed to agencies on Thursday. Separately, the Biden administration is instituting a new policy of granting waivers to some White House staff who've used cannabis. While the extent and recency of an applicant's use can still be factors in making employment decisions, OPM said that simply admitting to prior cannabis consumption doesn't necessarily mean a person lacks, quote, the suitability or fitness for a position, end quote, as long as they commit to not use marijuana while employed. Quote, it would be inconsistent with suitability regulations to implement a policy of finding an individual unfit or unsuitable for federal service solely on the basis of recency of marijuana use, acting OPM Director Kathleen M. McGettigan wrote. Quote, past marijuana use, including recently discontinued marijuana use, should be viewed differently from ongoing marijuana use, end quote. The Drug Enforcement Administration says the federal legalization of hemp is creating law enforcement complications, claiming that the policy is giving cover to criminal organizations that traffic in still illegal marijuana. Former Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue said last year that DEA, quote, really didn't like the whole program to begin with, referring to the crop's legalization, and USDA, quote, had some pushback from DEA, end quote, when it was crafting rules for the market. DEA, for its part, maintains that the policy change, quote, creates opportunities for criminals looking to exploit state legalization while presenting challenges for federal law enforcement, end quote. Leaders of military veterans organizations sent a clear message to congressional lawmakers this week. Federal marijuana and psychedelics laws are outdated and should be reformed to give service members alternative treatment options for conditions like post-traumatic stress injury. During joint hearings before the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committees on Wednesday and Thursday, three veteran service organizations, Minority Veterans of America, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and Disabled American Veterans, submitted written testimony backing a policy change to expand access to or increase research on medical cannabis, and one argued in favor of loosening restrictions to enable veterans to utilize psychedelics in their mental health treatment. Cannabis's medical potential and the way that federal policy impedes research was also raised during one of the hearings by a freshman Republican member of Congress. Does Vice President Kamala Harris still support legalizing marijuana? According to a short passage buried in a new Bloomberg report about efforts to appoint a new top White House drug policy official, the answer seems to be no. Harris, who sponsored a comprehensive Senate bill to end federal cannabis prohibition in 2019, has now reportedly adopted the same position as President Joe Biden, who opposes legalization, the outlet reported on Monday. There have been signs that might be the case, as Harris has stepped back her calls for broad reform in recent months, opting instead to push for cannabis decriminalization and expungements in line with the president's agenda. Bloomberg reported that an aide to Harris's team said her positions are now the same as Biden's, though the source asked not to be named because the vice president hasn't announced the policy shift. Hawaii lawmakers on Wednesday voted to move forward with a bill that would legalize marijuana sales in the state and allow adults 21 and over to grow the plant at home. The vote comes a day after a Senate panel approved separate legislation to significantly increase the amount of cannabis that is decriminalized under current state law. The proposal, Senate Bill 767, would allow adults 21 and older to possess up to 1 ounce of cannabis for personal use. The State Department of Health would craft rules around business licensing and retail sales by July 1st, though it's not yet clear when stores would open. Hawaii lawmakers have since removed criminal penalties for possessing 3 grams of cannabis, replacing the punishment with a $130 fine and no possibility of jail time. A bill approved Tuesday by the Senate Judiciary Committee, SB 578, would increase that threshold to 30 grams, or just over an ounce. One day after New Mexico's House of Representatives passed legislation to legalize marijuana for adults 21 and older, a Senate panel held a hearing Saturday to take initial testimony on 3 competing legalization bills introduced in that chamber. The committee did not vote on any of the measures, instead using the hearing to compare the various Senate proposals to one another, as well as to the House-passed legislation, HB 12. The bill's sponsors will now work to combine elements of the various Senate proposals before returning to the committee for a possible vote next Saturday. Despite overlap on some issues, major disagreements remain over the structure of the commercial cannabis market, how tax revenue will be allocated, and the makeup of a state oversight board that would regulate the new industry. Lawmakers have a deadline of March 20th to work out the differences, or there could be no marijuana legalization in New Mexico this session. As Pennsylvania lawmakers are set to take up a new bipartisan marijuana legalization bill, the governor on Monday announced that he granted expedited pardons for low-level cannabis offenses for 69 more people. Governor Tom Wolf signed off on the clemency actions last week as part of the expedited review program for nonviolent marijuana offenses through the State Board of Pardons. With this latest round, a total of 95 people have had their cannabis convictions pardoned through the initiative to date. The governor also issued pardons for 241 unrelated offenses for a total of 310 last week. He said in a press release that the clemency gives these people, quote, a chance to put the conviction behind them, offering them more opportunities as they build careers, buy homes, and move on with their lives free of this burden, end quote. A marijuana legalization bill backed by top Maryland lawmakers got its first hearing on Thursday, with much of the discussion focused not on whether to end prohibition, but how specifically to do it, including ways to merge the legislation with a separate proposal in the state's House of Delegates. While the Senate Finance Committee did not vote on the measure, which is co-sponsored by Senate President Bill Ferguson, Majority Leader Nancy King, and key committee chairs, lawmakers used the meeting to discuss provisions of the legislation and gauge the likelihood of its success. Under Senator Brian Feldman's bill, SB 708, adults 21 and older would be able to purchase and possess up to 4 ounces of marijuana or products containing up to 1,500 milligrams of THC. They could also grow up to 6 cannabis plants at home for personal use. If West Virginia lawmakers send a bill to legalize marijuana to his desk, he will sign it, Governor Jim Justice said on Tuesday.
Really and truly, the legalizing of marijuana in certain areas or certain states that have that, from a recreational standpoint, have lowered their drug-type problem.
The governor expressed that he's personally against legalization, but can see the trend developing nationwide toward it.
I do believe that that is coming, and the wave is coming across all of our states. And as that wave comes, if our House Republicans and Democrats and Senate Republicans and Democrats would get behind that effort, if from a standpoint of legalization of recreational marijuana, and they would be supportive of that, I would too.
An Alabama Senate committee on Wednesday approved a bill to decriminalize marijuana possession. The Judiciary Committee advanced the legislation after brief discussion in a 6-3 vote. It now heads to the full Senate for consideration. Under the proposal, sponsored by Senator Bobby Singleton, possessing less than 2 ounces of marijuana would be a simple violation that carries a $250 fine. That's consistent with a previous version of the senator's decriminalization bill that also moved through committee in 2019, but later died without a floor vote. But unlike that last version, this one also seems to take a fine-only approach to possession of more than 2 ounces of marijuana as well, or possession in the first degree. Possessing 2 or more ounces of cannabis would be a Class C misdemeanor, punishable by a $250 fine for a first offense and a $500 fine for a second offense. After failing to whip the two-thirds vote in the House for the constitutional drug prohibition amendment that passed the Senate, Idaho Senator C. Scott Groh on Wednesday debuted a rewrite of the amendment in the House. Groh's proposed amendment would add Schedule 1 and 2 drug prohibition to the state constitution if approved by voters. It would mandate that those drugs could only be legalized by a two-thirds vote of the legislature. The express intent, according to Groh, is to beat back medical marijuana initiatives that have been proposed every 2 years but failed to make the ballot in Idaho since 2010. Groh described medical marijuana states like neighboring Utah as being on the, quote, slippery slope toward drug legalization, end quote. He also implied that over half his fellow legislators would fall prey to the corrupting influence of marijuana industry money if there weren't a two-thirds vote required to legalize medical marijuana. Groh admits that, quote, constitutional amendments trump initiatives, end quote, so that if his drug prohibition bill is on the same ballot as a currently circulating medical marijuana initiative, a win for prohibition beats any vote for medical marijuana. The mayor of Washington, D.C. on Friday introduced a bill to create a regulated marijuana market in the district, and while similar legislation has been introduced in past years, the new proposal comes as Democrats take control of both chambers of Congress, a situation that bodes well for removing a federal spending rider that has long blocked legal cannabis sales from being implemented in the nation's capital. In other words, there's renewed hope among advocates that 2021 will finally be the year that a commercial cannabis industry can be created in D.C., where voters approved an initiative legalizing marijuana possession and home cultivation in 2014. Congressional appropriations legislation has since prevented the district from authorizing sales, with Republicans in the majority in at least one chamber on Capitol Hill. Michiganders bought more than $341 million of legal marijuana in fiscal year 2020, and tax revenue from those sales is being dispersed to local governments and services. The Michigan Department of Treasury is distributing nearly $10 million to more than 100 state municipalities and counties as part of the Michigan Regulation and Taxation of Marijuana Act. That breakdown of disbursements includes 38 cities, 7 villages, 21 townships, and 38 counties. Each began receiving payments from the Marijuana Regulation Fund for every licensed retail store and microbusiness in its jurisdiction. For the state's 2020 fiscal year, each eligible municipality and county will receive around $28,000 for every licensed retail store or microbusiness. For the state of Michigan's 2020 fiscal year, more than $31 million was collected from the 10% adult-use marijuana excise tax. Combined with fees, $45.7 million is available for distribution. Voters in Spokane, Washington could make the city one of the latest to decriminalize psilocybin mushrooms under a proposed ordinance that was recently filed by local activists. The initiative, which was introduced by the group Decriminalize Spokane, would make enforcement of laws prohibiting the personal possession, cultivation, and limited distribution of psilocybin for adults 21 and over among the city's lowest priorities and would further ban officials from, quote, using any city funds or resources to assist in the enforcement of laws imposing criminal penalties for the use, possession, transportation, cultivation, or distribution of psilocybin mushrooms, end quote. The measure, which activists intend to qualify for the city's ballot, includes stipulations prohibiting the use or display of the psychedelic fungi in public places. The whereas section of the measure points to scientific research on the therapeutic potential of psilocybin and the relatively low health risks it poses. Marijuana and hemp are essentially the same plant, but marijuana has a higher concentration of Delta-9 THC, and as a source of intoxication, it has been a main focus of entrepreneurs, as well as state and federal lawmakers. Delta-8 THC, if discussed at all, was an esoteric, less potent byproduct of both plants. That changed with the 2018 Farm Bill, an enormous piece of federal legislation that, among other things, legalized widespread hemp farming and distribution. The law also specifically allowed the sale of the plant's byproducts. The only exception was Delta-9 THC, with a high enough level to define it as marijuana. Because the legislation made no mention of Delta-8, entrepreneurs leapt into the void and began extracting and packaging it as a legal, edible, and smokable alternative. Proponents say it provides a marijuana-light high without the anxiety or paranoia of Delta-9 THC. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, March 5th, 2021. I'm Russ Belville. Cannabis Headline News is heard at the top of every hour on Radical Russ Radio, and Friday's news is contained within the free Russ Belville Show Live podcast. For daily downloads of Cannabis Headline News podcast to your device every morning, subscribe by becoming a patron of Radical Russ Radio.
Yeah, I don't know about that Delta 8 THC. I'm willing to try it, but I've always had this theory that if something was going to get you high, it would be illegal already. Right? We can't have people enjoying themselves with chemicals. You have to do that by, jumping out of airplanes and bungee jumping off of bridges and across the Snake River Canyon, or going out and shooting guns or driving cars real fast. That's the only way you're really allowed to get high.
The coffee
right?
pot in Sumter, Oregon.
Now. That's the way things have to be in the state of Idaho. We're all about freedom, right? Freedom. Well, unless you want to use an herb, I guess. All right. That sound means that it's 4:20 here in America's last absolute prohibition state. So be careful out there if you're getting involved in any sort of safety briefings. You never know where the man might be looking. Check out where the wind is blowing. And join me right after these breaks. We'll talk about hemp.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Good people don't smoke marijuana.
All right. Well, maybe you're high, too.
The Coffee Pot in Sumter, Oregon is your fast, friendly marijuana shop nestled in the beautiful Elkhorn Mountain Range outside of Baker City. We're serving Eastern Oregon and Idaho's Treasure Valley with the selection of flower, pre-rolls, vapes, dab, and edibles you need at the prices that make it well worth the drive. Don't venture to some well-watched parking lot in some border town dispensary just to take a number and wait in a long line for your cannabis products. Make the drive to the Coffee Pot in Sumter and deal one-on-one with your bud tender with no waiting. See, feel, and smell the products you're after and make your purchase knowing your tax dollars are helping a small tourist community that needs it. Plus, every dollar you spend is a point toward our Bong Bucks program that earns you coupons on glass and accessories. The Coffee Pot also honors our military, seniors, teachers, and first responders with a 10% discount. And as always, OMMP patients pay no 20% tax. Come on up to the Coffee Pot in Sumter, the first business on the left, on the side of the two-story log cabin restaurant, and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
And now, another episode of Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre. I'm your host, Leonard Pinth-Garnell III. Tonight we revel in the hilarity of acquiring cannabis when miscommunication occurs between the cannabis delivery service and the consumer. The Royal Shakespearean Cannabis Theatre Company presents the classic David's Not Present piece, made famous by Richard Merrin and Thomas Chong. Enjoy.
Hark. Who goes there?
It is I, David. Pray grant me immediate passage, good sir. I come bearing a package of great import.
Hark! Who goes there?
It is I, David, as I previously informed you. Make haste in unlatching this portal, for I believe the constable hath cast his visage upon me. I bring you the package you seek.
Tis David?
Affirmative, my good man. Tis David. Now open this door forthwith.
David's not present.
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre, I'm Leonard Pinth-Garnell III.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Been a busy week for me as I've been testifying on a number of bills in the state of Idaho, and yesterday, two bills in the state of Oregon, all having to do with marijuana. It's just kind of amazing that there's so much to talk about, but the latest one is kind of it's a little one. It's not as egregious as Senator Groh's constitutional prohibition or Senator Vick's 35 district single district veto bill, but this one's also one that is clearly targeted at marijuana. It's Senate Bill 1150, and what it does is it clarifies that an initiative petition to propose a law in the state of Idaho must gather all of its signatures within the state of Idaho. Now, you might think, okay, what's the problem with that? That seems reasonable, right? Well, here's the problem with it. I'll tell you the problem, and then I'll tell you what it's really about. The problem is, the Idaho Constitution gives us the right to propose and pass laws. The passing of those laws can be done by Idahoans who are registered voters. The proposal of those laws is done by Idahoans who are registered voters. But to vote on it, one does not have to be in the state of Idaho. One can absentee vote. And right now, under the law, a person could absentee sign a ballot initiative. Let me tell you how it would work. The law requires that the person passing around the petition, who's got the clipboard, has to be an Idaho resident. and requires that the person signing it has to be an Idaho voter, and that it is notarized by an Idaho notary public in the state of Idaho. So you could conceivably be a soldier, and you're headed off to Iraq, and you meet up with other soldiers there in Iraq who are also from Idaho. So you get online and you download the petition. As an Idaho resident, you can spread it around to all your buddies in Iraq while you're out in the field or wherever. And these soldiers who are serving in the Idaho National Guard, let's say, who are Idaho residents, who still get to vote absentee in their military ballot, could sign this petition. And you could collect all of these petitions. And as that one soldier who was getting them all signed, get yourself back to Idaho. One person has to go back to Idaho to get it notarized. So go back to Idaho, get them notarized, and turn those in. So under this bill, this SB 1150, that would be impossible because nobody outside the state of Idaho could sign it. Now, that's the problem. This could be for soldiers. It could be for students who, you know, a Rhodes Scholar studying in England can't fly home. This could be for someone, you know, working on an oil rig, has an Idaho company working on an oil rig in the middle of the ocean, can't get home. So this is something that's troubling in that it's an attack on initiative rights generally. But what it's really about is an attack on the medical marijuana initiative, because there happens to be 8 different parking lots in the city of Ontario, Oregon, that are full of cars with Idaho plates every day of the week, 7 days of the week, that you know are adults, 21 and older, who are likely Idaho registered voters, or if they're not, you could easily register them there, and you could get them to sign this medical marijuana petition just 50 yards, just 100 yards, just 1,000 yards over the Idaho border in Ontario. That's what this is designed to attack. Now, Senator Lodge wants to kind of wave that away and say, oh, no, this is just about gathering signatures. But this entire legislative session has been nothing but attack upon attack against the initiative process, all designed to stop both medical marijuana and a push for the minimum wage increase in the state of Idaho.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, esteemed senators. My name is Russ Belville. I'm a spokesperson for the Idaho Citizens Coalition, and I represent the over 200,000 Idahoans who use marijuana. Here we are once again as the Senate attempts to blow up constitutional petitioning rights just to stop us from putting a medical marijuana initiative on the ballot that 3 out of 4 Idahoans support. First, it was Senator Groh with his proposal to put prohibition in the state constitution. So we are speaking about Senate Bill 1150, which is a transparently obvious attempt to preemptively stop us from collecting signatures from the thousands of Idahoans who visit 8 legal marijuana shops in Ontario, Oregon every day, spending $8.2 million per month and gifting that tiny town of 11,000 people with $250,000 in tax revenue every month. At this point, we're just waiting for a bill that bans initiative petitions from using the letter M. Because if you don't think this bill is about stopping marijuana, then what problem is it solving? Under Idaho law, someone who's collecting signatures for a petition has to be an Idaho resident. Someone who's signing that petition must be a registered Idaho voter and therefore an Idaho resident. The petition must be notarized within the state of Idaho by a notary public who is licensed by the state of Idaho. The signature verification of the Idaho voter's signature is validated by an Idaho county clerk against an Idaho database. Where those Idahoans are standing when they sign shouldn't factor into it. A person's constitutional right to propose and pass laws as guaranteed in Article 3, Section 1 shouldn't be dependent on whether there's Idaho soil underneath their feet. There haven't been any allegations we're aware of so far concerning fraudulent out-of-state initiative signatures. As far as we know, everyone who signed our petitions and the ones that came before us were all Idaho residents, because if they weren't, their signatures would be kicked off by the county clerks. All this bill will succeed in accomplishing is further restricting initiative petition rights of Idaho college students who might be studying abroad, Idaho service members who might be deployed overseas, and Idaho business workers who may have extended work out of state. And the idea that, oh, they've got 18 months to buy a plane ticket and fly back and take time off of work isn't going to work for a poor college student studying abroad, might not work for the service member who can't get out of his commitment, and might not work for the business person who's got the extended contract. This is especially egregious when we talk about the power to propose and pass laws. For passing laws, we don't have to be in Idaho. We can do that through absentee ballot. So clearly we recognize the right of passing those laws doesn't depend on Idaho soil. Why should proposing those laws depend on being on Idaho soil? I urge you to reject this bill and to stop attacking the citizen initiative petition rights just because you don't like marijuana. Thank you, and I'll stand for any questions.
So that was my testimony before the Senate State Affairs Committee. Did get cut off a little bit for trying to bring up two other bills, but that is part of the point. They have the bill to put drug prohibition into the Constitution, that's HJR 4 now, so that you can't run an initiative to do medical marijuana. They've got the bill SB 1110 to increase the signature requirements from 18 districts to all 35 districts, so it's exceptionally impossible to try to get medical or recreational marijuana on the ballot. And now this one. There was absolutely nobody who was clamoring to stop anyone from gathering signatures out of state, because it really, to my knowledge, has never happened. We didn't do it because 2 years ago, 2019, there weren't dispensaries in Ontario, Oregon for most of the time that we were collecting signatures. And I don't know so much with Northern Idaho if they've done it up in Clarkston or Pullman or Spokane. But now there exists 8 dispensaries. And the other thing I think that exists that frightens them is one of these dispensaries put on a concert a few months back before over a year back now, is before the pandemic, where they flew in Snoop Dogg into the little municipal airport in a private jet in Ontario. He flies in. He does a 1.5-hour set, I think it was, of just being a DJ, just Snoop Dogg DJ, and brought over thousands of people from the state of Idaho. I think they fear that we could do something like that, put on a fundraiser with a Snoop Dogg, a Tommy Chong, a Jim Belushi, bring these people over, because they're not going to go to Idaho. You're not going to get Snoop Dogg in the state of Idaho where he can be arrested. Jim Belushi won't do it. We've already asked. He won't go to the state of Idaho. And that's the other thing that's maddening about this, is trying to pass these laws, trying to change the law as you're a criminal, as everyone who would want to help you has an incentive not to, for fear that their face will be recognized, they'll lose their job, they'll lose their child, they'll lose their freedom. But hey, it's a life's work, I suppose. If you're going to end marijuana prohibition, why not attack the worst state in the nation on marijuana? The state that is being left behind by West Virginia. A state that's less progressive on marijuana than Alabama and Mississippi and North and South Dakota. It's one of the things that kills me about these people that say, oh my God, look at all the other states. Look at all the other states, how they've gone to hell. Really? Arkansas has gone to hell since it's done medical marijuana? Missouri? Missouri has... Come on now. 33 after. We'll be back after this break with an extended radical rant on the city of Ontario, Oregon, which for them, $250,000 a month isn't enough tax revenue. They want to raise the taxes on the people of Idaho who don't get to vote on it. More than triple the tax is what they want. We'll talk about that right after the break.
Russ Belville. You know me, I'm from Idaho, where we've got 2 strains of marijuana, got some and don't. But until I can help legalize marijuana in the Gem State, I can still bring you the best the hemp plant has to offer at Boise Hemp World. Boise Hemp World features the Mama Duck line of CBD tinctures and pain creams, and the Billy Dogs line of CBD pet tinctures and dog treats. Hemp World also features CBD candy, gummies, gum, spices, and a whole assortment of tie-dye and hemp clothing and accessories. And under the laws of America's last absolute prohibition state, all Hemp World CBD products are 100% THC-free, so you won't fail any drug screenings. Boise Hemp World, now with two locations, our flagship store at 6928 West State Street in the Glenwood Shopping Center, and our new location at 1720 West State Street in the Albertson Shopping Center. We're also the headquarters for the Idaho Cannabis Coalition's campaign to legalize medical marijuana in 2022. Find us online at BoiseHempWorld.com or call us toll-free at 844-IDA-HEMP and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
And now, Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
If you've only got half a joint left, should you smoke it at 210? This has been Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
This is what Storyteller Kitty Time was supposed to be. Like, help people, like, first acknowledge that it's okay to just smoke a little pot for pain. And second of all, how not to get eaten up by the big cannabis machine who wants to sell you this swag because they got a lot of it. But now this concept has evolved into the Storyteller Kitty Time podcast, blog, and YouTube channel. So join me, Lisa Kunze, recovering teacher and hiding turn ski bum, and the Storyteller Kitty crew as we attempt to find the compassionate truth in the middle and share our stories with no easy solutions, but that do share the tension of the calm before the storm, the moment when we pause to actually listen to each other before we attack. Take a break from the noise, relax for an hour, and listen to our tales. All links available on anchor.fm/STKT or replay daily on RadicalRuss.com.
All right, guys, here we go. We've got the top six answers on the board. Name something that gets passed around. Chris.
A joint.
A joint.
This is Radical Russ Radio, where a joint is always the number one answer.
Now, Chris, I don't know what 100 people you thought we were talking to at some nice little mall across good old America, but I'm pretty sure the people didn't tell the survey people, hey, an illegal drug. Let's turn around and see how many weed heads are out there with Chris. A joint!
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Today we're going to rant a little bit about the city of Ontario, Oregon, or as I like to call it, Onion Town. It's one of the nation's the largest producers of onions. They put a lot of onions out of this part of the world. But they're also putting a lot of marijuana out of this part of the world. City of Ontario is now second only to Portland, Oregon, in the sales of marijuana. For the last 12 months, has averaged $8.2 million a month. And that's because it sits on the border, right on the Snake River, right on Interstate 84, just 50 miles away from the city of Boise. Boise's about 220,000. The metro area, all the suburbs, all the other cities that comprise Ada and Canyon County, is about 750,000. It's roughly comparable to Portland, Oregon, as far as the metro area, depending on how you define it. So the city of Ontario has had a, in the past 18 months, has made over $130 million in sales. And from that, of course, they get a 3% tax, which has worked out to $3.6 million in tax. And this is a city that's, like a lot of rural cities, had been falling off economically, losing jobs, shedding young people who would flee the town, the population continually going down, them getting so desperate, they tried to pass a sales tax in the city of Ontario. And if you know anything about Oregon politics, sales tax is forbidden. That we don't even think about sales tax in the state of Oregon. And it failed. And then, of course, after that failed, a company that I'm a part of helped to pay for the drafting of the overturning of that ban in Ontario, Oregon, that brought now 18 marijuana dispensaries to the town. And these dispensaries, it's open secret. Everyone knows they're serving the state of Idaho. 90% of their customers coming from the state of Idaho. So we start this segment with a segment of the Ontario City Council meeting from February 23rd. And you'll hear John Kirby, who's one of the city councilors, and he owns the True Value Hardware store in the center of Ontario. It's a great store. Love it. I go there all the time. So he runs the Ontario store there. And he's a city councilor, and he's talking about the marijuana windfall that they've received, the tax money that they're bringing in that now works out to $250,000 a month, and how that might be jeopardized by what's going on in the state of Idaho with respect to marijuana policy. You'll also hear the mayor, Riley Hill, in this clip. Let me play this for you.
Mr. Mayor, I have watched the marijuana industry for some time, and of course they have made a big impact on our community, but right now our future is in the state of Idaho and the battle is going on. So many of you in this room may have heard this, but essentially Senator Scott Groh out of Eagle, Idaho is leading a charge to put into the Idaho state constitution that no marijuana or THC producing plants be allowed or their byproducts in Idaho. So if that were to happen, and it did pass the Idaho Senate, is now going to the House, it will have to go to a vote of the people. So if that happens, our revenue from marijuana, why would people drive from Boise or Nampa or Caldwell to Ontario to buy their marijuana when they could have it in their own community? And so we've seen the same thing happen. Once Ontario started marijuana sales in Huntington dropped by 74% approximately. And so then our the city's revenue based on that would drop significantly. At the same time, there is an active thing in the state of Idaho to introduce marijuana to the state. So they have two bills to introduce medical marijuana, one of them called the Sergeant Kitzhaber bill, that would introduce medical marijuana into the state. And that's typically the way the marijuana industry gets it into the state. And so other activities as well. But both issues are going to have to go to a vote of the people. And so that vote would take place in 2022. So we're going to get a major inkling of what's happening. Now, the demographics of Idaho is changing. We have California moving to Idaho. Washingtonians, Oregonians, and they may be conservative in their state, but when they get to Idaho, they can be down and out liberals.
And I know that you're relating this to PERS, Mr.
Yeah.
Kirby.
So it's all based on marijuana money. Everybody knows it. Everybody's looking at that big sum of money. Everybody wants a cut. This is like winning the lottery. You find relatives you never knew you had.
That's to answer Freddie's question. Thank you.
So Mr. Kirby there, John Kirby, the city councilman, saying that this is like winning the lottery. And the mayor, Riley Hill, said, how are you relating this to PERS? Now, keep that in mind. PERS in Oregon is the Public Employee Retirement System. PERS, right? P-E-R-S. And a lot of cities are in debt on this, and Ontario is one of them. So Ontario's facing this debt that has to do with public employee retirement. It was an existing debt. Nothing to do with marijuana. It has nothing to do with marijuana coming into the city of Ontario, right? But they're looking at that marijuana money as how they can pay down this enormous debt that they're dealing with, that they've had before marijuana was even in the city of Ontario, right? So keep that in mind as we fast forward to yesterday. Yesterday, there was hearings in the House Revenue Committee, I believe it was, for the state of Oregon. And they're hearing two bills that are specifically that had been specifically drafted by the city of Ontario, or at the request of the city of Ontario, by their Eastern Oregon representative, Representative Owens. Two bills, House Bill 2014 and House Bill 2015, specifically drafted, specifically requested by the city of Ontario, that's bringing in $250,000 a month on a 3% tax. The 2015 bill raises the 3% tax to a 10% tax. Let me rephrase. It allows for a vote to raise the local city tax on marijuana for any city from 3% to 10%. They want to boost the tax by 7%. This is being requested by the city of Ontario, and I'll let them explain why they need all this extra money, even though they've already made $3.6 million in taxes in the past 18 months, and they're bringing in $250,000 a month now for the past year. Isn't enough for the city of Ontario. And then the other bill is 2014, and it's a little more complex, but I'll flesh it out for you. So there's a 3% local tax in Oregon, and there's a 17% state tax in Oregon. So the combined tax when you go to a marijuana store in Oregon is 20%. It's one of the lowest tax rates in the nation. The 17% tax is divvied up amongst, there's a share of it that goes here and a share of it goes there, but one of the pie slices that gets divvied up is a return to the cities and counties that have marijuana shops and growers and processors and so forth. And the way that formula is calculated, part of it has to do with your population. So, city of Portland has a lot of dispensaries and a lot of people, so it gets a big chunk of that 17%. Place like Ontario gets like $50,000. It's a small city, just 11,000. So what they are asking in House Bill 2014, the city of Ontario is asking that any city in Oregon that has a 10,000 or greater population that has marijuana businesses should get to count as part of its population any statistical metropolitan area of which it is a part that is greater than 600,000. Now, does that sound complex to you? Let me break it down. Ontario ought to get to count Boise's population for its share of the state marijuana pie. That's what they're arguing for. Ontario is saying because all these people come from Boise, come in for 15 minutes and buy some weed and leave, they don't smoke it in Ontario. They take it and leave. Because of that, they should get more of the state tax pie, which of course reduces the state tax pie that is going to Ontario or to Portland, an actual city of 750,000 that actually has pot smokers in it. So let me let them make their case. This is Riley Hill speaking first, the mayor of Ontario, Oregon.
Please hear me about the circumstances that confront Ontario versus Fruitland and Pay, Idaho, our neighbors only separated by a bridge over the Snake River. Idaho has a lower income tax, lower estate tax, lower property tax, lower power rates, lower professional liability insurance, and more lax land use laws. All of these things contribute to the huge growth for our neighbors across the river. We are rapidly becoming a city of have-nots, and our neighbors across city of halves. What do we have? We have seven dispensaries currently operating and two more under construction. This is not all bad because it has resulted in jobs and the building of the conversion of some eyesores to nice looking buildings. I have personally benefited.
Okay, I'm going to fade that out because I did not realize that it also recorded the vendor who came in. I was actually testifying online while I was working at the dispensary up in Sumter, Oregon. So at that moment, we had one of our vendors come in and I had to go speak to her. But basically, Riley Hill, mayor of Ontario, is trying to make this point that Ontario is so overwhelmed with homeless people and vandalism and, oh my God, that the roads are being worn down by all these people coming in from Idaho to buy marijuana. And this was a point that was echoed by, as you heard before, John Kirby, who is a member of the Ontario City Council.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is John Kirby, and I am a city councilor for Ontario, Oregon. I know you are hearing us out of duty, and the needs are everywhere, but we have a unique opportunity to help mitigate problems that are new to this part of Oregon. And this will apply to both bills, please. Community poverty is overwhelming. We have the lowest per capita income in the state at $16,335, and the second lowest medial household income in the state. Our homeless are probably not even mentioned in those figures. Because of the many causes, including but not limited to families who are here to support their Snake River Correctional Institution inmates, agricultural workers out of work, poor from other smaller jurisdictions who are encouraged to come here, poor Idahoans seeking better or free health care, our homeless issues have grown exponentially in the last 3 years. I attended a meeting of business and property owners from a segment of Ontario last week. It has always been a poor part of the community, but it has dramatically changed. They are frustrated by homeless and drug issues. We know these issues are in metro areas, but never here. Homeless are urinating and defecating on their properties. Needles are thrown on the ground and their property vandalized. All this in the past 12 months. In our high school, 30% of the students couch surf to have a home so they can finish school. Homeless with mental issues can only be under observation in our local hospital. We have to transport those with greater needs 4 hours away, one direction, to get them into a residential treatment facility. I know a local veteran with mental and emotional issues who's recently released from the Boise VA hospital. He has a job, but he can't get there because he lost the vehicle he was using and the room he lived in during his stay in the hospital. He's living in a motel, but soon will use his savings and he will be on the street and unable to get to his jobs. Vandalism and shoplifting are rampant. We trespass several people a week from my hardware store. For the second year in a row, we have had temporary winter shelter that is filled with mainly seniors and adults with children. We have 16 units and have over 300 homeless in the city, with more coming weekly. Stability is needed. We can't solve this entirely now, but with additional resources, we can be more able to meet the needs. Our window of opportunity is short. Once Idaho approves the sale of recreational marijuana, we will lose this opportunity. Thank you for hearing me.
So, admitting that they're depending on Idaho's prohibition to keep the cash flowing, and this idea that marijuana legalization causes homelessness, no, lack of homes and jobs causes homelessness. And what he's attributing to marijuana should be better attributed to economic activity. The fact that there's so many people there, there's so much commerce going on, there's so much construction, there's so many jobs that are needing to be filled. People who don't have jobs are coming to try to fill them. To be complaining about the economic boom that is happening in Ontario, Oregon. And remember, it was just a week ago they were complaining about not being able to pay down the public employee debt. Had nothing to do with homelessness, had nothing to do with defecation and urination outside. And if that's a problem, how about setting up public bathrooms for people? People got to go. Give them some place to go. Now, I'll give you one more city councilman. This is Ken Hart from the Ontario City Council speaking again to the Oregon House Revenue Committee.
Thank you very much, Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Ken Hart. I'm a member of the Ontario City Council, resident of Malheur County. And just would like to thank Representative Owens for his sponsorship of this. We very much appreciate that. My comments will apply both to House Bill 2014 and 2015. I support the comments of the mayor, our city manager, and Mr. Kirby. As they noted, again, with Idaho flooding into Ontario, we have 1,500 unique visitors a day into our small community. And you can imagine the pressure that puts on our resources, whether it's our police department, just the wear and tear on our roads. And we are very grateful for the 3% that we are able to collect now at the local level, but very much would like to see the ability to have a local vote to raise that as high as 10%. And I think that's the overall ask. And that ultimately would benefit every city in the state of Oregon. As you know, House Bill 2015 does just not benefit Ontario. It would benefit any city in the state of Oregon. And I have to assume most cities like us are under intense pressure financially right now, especially with COVID. How do we get our state and our city back on our feet? The areas that have been noted that we would utilize these funds for would be specifically homelessness, has been a significant increase in the last few years. Unrelated to marijuana, that's just a societal impact for many cities in Oregon. We also in Ontario have been using funds to pay down our PERS debt. As you know, many cities are having to put more and more money towards PERS interest, and we're utilizing these funds to be able to help us to reduce that debt so we can free up operational funds. So that way we can have more police and more fire and more behavioral health services. And then trying to improve a community like Ontario with increases in parks, bike paths. So being smart on how we would utilize these funds to invest in one-time capital improvements to get our debt down. So when and if Idaho does legalize marijuana, we've paid down that debt and we can free up our operational dollars to go back into police and fire and other services. So this would be a big benefit to our community, but also to every community in the state of Oregon if they are allowed to have this flexibility to increase the local tax up to 10%. I appreciate your consideration.
Let us raise the tax and let us hurry because we don't want Idaho to legalize and kill our cash cow. That's exactly what he's talking about. Well, I had some testimony in response to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Russ Belleville, and I have a unique perspective on HB 2014 and 2015. I'm talking to you right now from my shift at the coffee pot dispensary that Portia Mittens, two testifiers ago, is the owner of. We are in the small mountain community of Sumter, Oregon, population 208 or 209 when I'm here. I also live in the city of Ontario, Oregon, and I am working on the medical marijuana initiative in the state of Idaho. So, with that perspective, I'd like to say I oppose both of these bills. First, with HB 2014, if Ontario gets a larger slice of any pie, that means other people are getting a smaller slice of that pie, including the cities of Huntington and Sumter in eastern Oregon that had been flushed with marijuana tax money until the shops opened up in Ontario. Now, again, like Portia said, good for them. That's very nice. But we've been coping with both a pandemic and a massive reduction in our business. Having to keep our prices low, keeping our prices low is the only way we're able to bring in visitors from farther away, lure them from Ontario. A raise in the taxes is going to make that near impossible and likely could shut down this business, which is one of the few black-owned marijuana dispensaries in the state of Oregon. With regard to HB 2015, it's surprising to me to hear the city leaders of the city of Ontario complaining about 15,000 unique visitors coming into town every day, as if there's nothing but bad that comes from that. That city is pulling in $250,000 in marijuana tax revenue, 90% of it, as admitted, from Idahoans. Those Idahoans won't get a chance to vote on whether that tax goes up to 3%, from 3% to 10%. They'll just see their prices go up. And if those Idahoans see those prices go up, fewer of them will travel to Ontario, and more of them will get their product from the black market in the state of Idaho. So that is a problem with the bill as well. Also a problem with this is we're continuing to see Ontario getting into this mode of depending on Idaho's prohibition. So much so that when I was working on the bills in Idaho, Mayor Riley Hill was there, was signed up to testify for the bill that would prohibit Idaho from ever having medical marijuana. So I'm concerned about how this is starting to creep into interstate politics, where the people in rural eastern Oregon might be fighting in the state of Idaho to continue criminalizing those people in order to get the lucrative tax revenue from the cross-border traffic. John Kirby, earlier at one of the city council meetings for Ontario, called it like hitting the lottery and warned of Idaho changing its marijuana laws and losing that lottery. I think $250,000 a month is plenty, and the people of Idaho don't get a say on that. They're getting all the jobs, business, and extra revenue from gas tax from the visitors of Idaho. That should be enough. Thank you for letting me testify, and stay tuned for any questions if anyone has them.